President Biden meets with his COVID-19 advisors today as cases rise in all 50 states, particularly among the unvaccinated.
In a news conference last night, Biden said sending military troops to stabilize the government in Haiti is not on his agenda, and he addressed the largest anti-government protests in decades in Cuba.
Cuba is unfortunately a failed state in repressing their citizens. There are a number of things that we would consider doing to help the people of Cuba, but it would require a different circumstance or a guarantee that they would not be taken advantage of by the government.
And let's start right there with our politics roundtable. Yamiche Alcindor is White House correspondent for the PBS NewsHour and moderator of Washington Week. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you. We're also glad to have Scott Wong, senior staff writer for The Hill. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you.
All right. And last night, President Biden talked about allowing people once again to send remittances or money to their relatives in Cuba. But he said not now because he's concerned that the government might confiscate the money, which is what we just heard him say there in the introduction. So what else is the White House considering here on Cuba, Scott?
Well, what they're President Biden and Democrats are under a lot of pressure from Republicans, including the governor down in Florida, Ron DeSantis, who is calling on the Democrats to help establish and restore stable internet connections in Cuba, which obviously would help some of the demonstrators communicate better on social media and for Cubans in general to receive, you know, up-to-date news and information about what's happening around the island. Now, Biden said just yesterday that he's open to helping restore this internet, but he provided few details. And so, you know, he has said on the remittances question, he has said, well, we don't want to allow remittances back to Cuba for Americans to send money into Cuba because we believe that that money would be confiscated. But it's really unclear what exactly the United States can do at this point other than to continue to show support for some of these democracy protesters in Cuba.
Yamiche, what do you think? I mean, this is the first time in a while that a U.S. president has seen so much instability in a region that is so very close to home. So, you know, what is at stake in your mind for Joe Biden as he does consider the response to the twin crises in Cuba and also in Haiti?
Well, there's a lot at stake in terms of politically. These are two countries that have large bases in the United States. You have, of course, a large diaspora in the United States among Haitian Americans in Miami, Cuban Americans in Miami, who have traditionally and pretty historically have voted for Republicans. And what you see here is really President Biden trying to thread this needle of paying attention to Latin America. But also when you talk to White House officials, it's very clear that he was very much focused on China and Russia and that this wasn't a region that was a top priority for him. It wasn't a region that he was talking about a lot. I did a lot of reporting talking to Haitian Americans and Haitians before the assassination of President Jovenel Moise, who were openly saying that they were disappointed in President Biden, feeling as though he was breaking a promise to do more for Haiti in particular. So this is a moment where President Biden, as he's dealing with Afghanistan and as he's dealing with the coronavirus pandemic and voting and all these other things, he now has this extra thing that he has to deal with. And that is, of course, the crises that we've been talking about in Latin America. So he's going to just have to figure out what can he do, what diplomatically can he do to figure these issues out.
Okay, guys, it's Infrastructure Week, and it really does seem to be Infrastructure Week this time. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he wants a test vote next Wednesday on a bipartisan plan to spend more than $1 trillion on traditional infrastructure, roads, bridges, broadband, that sort of thing. Texas Republican John Cornyn criticized the timing of the vote because the bill isn't even written yet.
As I see it, our friends on the other side have made it even more difficult to convince our colleagues, let alone the American people, that this type of spending is necessary.
Okay, Scott, we'll start with you. Why are Democrats in such a rush to get this voted on next week?
Well, because this thing has been negotiated and negotiated endlessly for months and months. And Chuck Schumer wants to see some sort of resolution. And so he is issuing a threat to Republicans that if you guys really are serious about infrastructure and you've announced that you have a bipartisan deal on a framework, then let's see the goods. And so he has set up this test vote for Wednesday, even though we have not even seen the legislative text of the bill. There are some last minute 11th hour issues that have come up having to do with how you pay for the infrastructure. One provision that's creating a big headache right now is this pay for that would raise $100 billion by allowing the IRS to go after tax cheats. And Republicans are now balking at this proposal and haven't come up with a solution of how to backfill that $100 billion. And so there's a lot of moving parts to this. But basically, we should know by the middle of next week whether or not Democrats can bring across 10 Republicans needed to break a Republican filibuster and really see if this thing's going to happen.
And Yamiche, how likely is it right now that President Biden at some point wins passage of that bigger transformational social change that he's been talking about related to infrastructure? What are the odds of that?
Well, as I was listening to Scott detail all of the different things that are going into why there is probably going to be this vote next week, I was hearing the voice of White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki saying, if we had the votes, there would be a vote. So what you have there is the White House saying, look, we want this to happen. We're confident that the president's vision is a vision that Democrats want to get behind, this idea of seeing infrastructure as helping communities, as helping children and families. But it was very clear from all the conversations that I've been having with White House officials all week that they don't have the votes yet. And that it's going to come down to whether or not they can really get a Democratic Party that has different priorities, that has big personalities, that has a very tight majority in both houses, whether or not they can get lawmakers all on the same page to back this big transformational change. The president absolutely wants this to happen. He feels like it's part of his legacy. In talking to people who are close to him and in White House aides, they see this as part of his sort of FDR, LBJ, Eisenhower moment, where he can say, here are all of the different things that I helped the American people with during a pandemic, but it's still not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Scott, just briefly before we move on to the next topic, you mentioned that we haven't seen the details of this yet. We don't know what it looks like exactly. I mean, what's going to happen between now and Wednesday? Will we see those things before the vote happens?
Well, the top negotiators right now, the bipartisan negotiators, Rob Portman of Ohio, the Republican, and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, the Democrat, along with a number of other well-known senators, are trying to keep this bipartisan deal, this fragile deal, together. And so they're working the phones. They're talking to the White House. They're talking to counterparts even in the House and their leadership in trying to make sure that they can stay together in order to reveal some legislation so that the budget office can actually score it and see what exactly the economic impact of this infrastructure package will look like.
Sounds like some late nights. All right, just briefly want to touch on voting rights. Ohio Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, the chairwoman of the Congressional Black Caucus, and eight other activists were arrested on Capitol Hill yesterday during a protest on voting rights. Let's listen to some tape.
Black women, free to vote! Black women, free to vote! Black women, free to vote!
This was the week that Texas Democrats met with lawmakers on Capitol Hill after they left their state to try to stop the Republicans from passing voting restrictions there in Austin. What do you think, Yamiche? Are Democrats moving the needle at all on this issue?
I mean, what an extraordinary week, an extraordinary move for Democrats. It to me underscores that Democrats are feeling as though they don't have a real strategy to push back against Republicans who are moving with such efficiency in state after state to pass these laws, to introduce these laws, to restrict voting, to change the way Americans vote. We see these Texas Democrats really at their wits' end saying, okay, all we can do is not show up so that we can deny this quorum. I don't know what that means for the greater strategy. When I talk to White House officials, they say the president is going to be continuing to engage and they're going to continue to try to to push to get something passed in Congress, which doesn't seem likely and seems less likely as time goes on and we get closer and closer to the midterms. But it's a real challenge for Democrats. The president gave this passionate speech saying that this is something that's as big as an issue as what caused the Civil War. But what actually that turns into in terms of strategy is hard, because when I talk to civil rights leaders, they say they want to see more urgency and more action from Democrats, but it's just not clear what that action is going to be.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it there. Yamiche Alcindor is White House correspondent for the PBS NewsHour, and she's the moderator of Washington Week. And Scott Wong is senior staff writer for The Hill.